Good morning. It's me. It's your favorite person, one of your favorite people. I know I'm at the top of your top three list, at least top five, top 10. I just want to be a top of your friend list, but it's me, Sharifa Hardy. It's Monday, and y'all know what that means. I had a lot of sleep this weekend, so I'm rested and ready to start some trouble. No, that's not good. I think I'm ready to make world peace. And to help with world peace. I think that's a better message for today. But whatever it is, I know you are going to enjoy today's show because I have a great group of people who are going to come together to not only help you learn about business and to share what they've done in business, but also to just entertain. We're going to have some fun this morning and we're going to laugh a little bit with everything going on in the world. I'm pretty sure we all need a little joy and laughter in our lives. So I'm going to ask you to do what I always ask you to do. And that's right. I'm going to need you to text a friend, call a friend, chat a friend, tweet a friend, whatever it is. But let your friends know that the Roundtable Talk Show is live on Facebook. We are coming to you live right now, at this moment. So tell your friends because friends don't let friends miss out on the Roundtable Talk Show. And so I'm going to introduce our first guest, someone who has been here before. You may recognize her. I recognize her from her beautiful smile and all of the time we shared before. Ms. Belle Walker, who is the founder and lead consultant of Bellevue Consulting. Good morning, Belle. How are you?
Good morning, Tarifa. I am excellent and so excited to be back on this show.
We had a good time when you were here before. Who are some of the other people? Do you remember who were on your show?
Yeah, we had Marlana White and Sir Amazing, and they were both very inspirational. I've got a new book out of the experience, some great conversation, learned, was inspired, and I'm looking forward to having that experience again.
See, that must have been a really great show because Marlana White has been on the show six times. She is so amazing. Like almost every other week, she's a guest on the show, but she really learned how to work the show because first she just came and she was in her chair. She's like, "Hi, I'm Marlana." After that, she was like, "No, this is good." She got her little table. She does CBD products. Her website is cbdparty.com. That's how I remember it because she's been here so much. But she put all her little CBD products on the table and just it was great. Sir Amazing has been on the show twice. I think that was a really great show. Belle, for the people who don't know, tell us a little bit about yourself, who you are, and what you do.
Absolutely. So I am a business consultant and I help organizations make sure that their processes and systems are aligned so that they are executing efficiently against all their business goals. And so a little more detail on what that means is that when you start a company, when you start an organization, you usually take a few minutes to think about how is your org structure set up? How do you want your teams to work together? But you make those decisions in a very specific context. Over time, your context changes, your goals change, but a lot of people leave those systems and structures the way they first were. That opens up a gap and a misalignment. It causes stress and tension for the people on your teams. And if you can close that gap, then you can get a lot of engagement back. You'll be more effective and efficient, and everyone's going to win. So, one thing I want to note about this little description, this motion here, this is a pivot. And so the whole world right now that's talking about business pivots needs to also be thinking about that internal structure pivot, and that's what I'm here to help with.
Wonderful. That has been a key word, I think, for the last 3 months. Pivot, 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 pivot. I don't think people even understood how much of a pivot they were doing at times, but it is necessary. With everything going on over the last 2 to 3 months, Bell, did you see more businesses coming to you and saying, "Hey, I know I need to make this change. Hey, I know I need to make this pivot. I know I need my infrastructure to change, policies, procedures, but I just don't know how." Did you see them coming to you with those questions?
The first couple months, to be honest, no, because I think a lot of businesses were very focused on pure survival and the notion of surviving more efficiently or re-engaging teams was a little farther down on the list. But over the last couple weeks, I think people have started to come to terms with the fact that the pandemic is not going away in the near future. And so whatever changes they've made are starting to look a little more permanent. And now they are realizing that they need to make those internal shifts. So I've been talking to more companies, doing more support, and I'm happy to talk to anybody for half hour, an hour who has some ideas, think they know what they need, just want a little bit of advice. I'm here for them. There's a form on my website. You can email me and we can set up some time to chat.
So you can tell when people have been on a roundtable talk show before. They come, they ready. Like we get my information out there. This is what I do. This is what you can get. Hey, I love it, Belle. I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, Ms. Ruxy Sharif. She's a caring leader and counselor and an online creative, and she does online creative counseling. Good morning, Ruxy. How are you?
Good morning, Sharifa. Thank you so much. I actually am going to start off with a poem in dedication of you and your roundtable talk show. So the poem begins. Thank you for having me, Sharifa Hardy. Your name refers to honor and nobility. Your roundtable talk show is heavenly, where we can share our views openly and chat with each other heartily. That is in dedication of you and our fellow guests and all who come here to share themselves.
Oh, that is so, I'm like, my eyes are tearing up. You have no idea. That just made me feel so special. Can you email that to me? I want to share it. I want to share it with the world.
Definitely. Gives you some understanding into my business, and my whole mission is creativity. So when I approach counseling, it's to apply creative approaches, such as composing a poem when I'm helping people with their problems, and it's to help them solve problems in the areas of relationships, career, education, and overall life. And this journey of mine, entrepreneurial journey, has been one of an enduring struggle and enduring hardship. I actually started into entrepreneurship last year, where I had a team of folks. We were all really enthusiastic about changing the career arena because we felt it was holding the people back who are unemployed, and it was not inclusive of job seekers. So we had come up with a new platform, and through the whole process, I just found that in trying to obtain assistance, there was just a lot of selfishness out there in the current business world, a lot of egocentrism. I remember just asking for mentorship. A response I received was, if I did not have the same leadership style or was not the type of leader that is conventional, that people tend to gravitate towards out of convention, that there would not be any assistance for me. Either it was I didn't fit a business cutter mold of being a leader, or I did not have exorbitant amounts of money that they require you when you're trying to incorporate in Delaware, incorporate your business. And there are lots of businesses out there which charge exorbitant amounts of money. So it came down to even finding help for us to launch our platform. We needed to have an expert with informational technology skills, and we couldn't find that person even after reaching out towards our networks. So in the end, it was devastating because I was responsible for my team. I was paying for their email accounts so they wouldn't be burdened. We were all different backgrounds, immigrant families, and we were trying to make a living for ourselves doing what our passion was, to help others. And then the most devastating aspect was we didn't have anyone to support us. So in the end, when finally I did find someone he referred his friend who was in the information technology background. he took a look and said that there was no way, given our limitations with technology, that we could ever bring our platform into implementation. So all the financial investment, everything I had put in with the small amount of savings I had were lost. And so I went through a very dark, depressing time after that, and our team disbanded. I had to disband them because there was no way we could move forward with the platform. And then I reflected on how difficult this was for me, and I thought about others out there who are coming from financial struggling backgrounds and who are struggling underserved socioeconomic classes, that they really are going to have an even worse time than even I did. I had some small amount of savings to put in. But if they have a dream or a passion and they do not have the funds, they're completely lost. And so there's no support there. So after this reflection, I had encouragement starting within that maybe the reason I went through all this hardship is to bring change to the business world and to transform it away from this selfish, egocentric mindset, cultural, you know, widespread cultural mindset that we see that is the cause really of the injustices we are seeing in the world, and towards shift it towards a more collaborative and mutually supportive culture. And so with this current business, I have affordable online counseling sessions, and I made sure that it would be light on people's budgets to be able to afford counseling. But also on the website, I collaborated with a brilliant student. He's a student at Binghamton University, class of 2022. And he programmed what I had conceived of, what we have on our website called the Creative Collaboration Forums. It's a new innovation which brings people together from different socioeconomic backgrounds. There are different careers to collaborate together. It's entirely free to join. You're all invited to our website. It's www.creativefecundity.com. And if you click on the Creative Collaboration Forums, you can become members for free. And then you can connect with each other. And it's all based on a selection of careers. But where this differs, it's a personalized
approach. I love it. I love it. I love the personalized approach.
Getting to know one another.
That's what we're looking for. We're looking for a personalized approach, starting conversations, getting to know each other. Your story is incredible. And I think you just won me over with the poem. I never had a poem made for me on the show. I think if you email it to me, I'll get it out in today's newsletter. I definitely want to share. And your story is incredible. We always seem to have to go through something in order to help other people. And you mentioned at the top of your conversation about the poem is just one of the ways to express each other, just you express yourself. But I want to introduce our next guest who expresses himself through entertainment, through music, Mr. Randy Gill of Gill's Way. Good morning, Randy. How are you?
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
You are welcome. Like, I can tell, like, you either from New York or in New York, one of the two. Which one?
I'm from D.C.
Oh, okay. You was in New York somewhere. I can tell. It's some New York somewhere in your tone.
Yeah, I'm from DC. But yeah, I run a DC based business.
I was born in DC.
You were?
Yes.
Oh yeah, where at?
I don't know. I was born in the General Hospital. I left when I was two.
Well, we welcome you. For me, I started this entertainment label for people in the industry that really don't know anything about the industry. Mm-hmm. So I deal with not just artists that rap, sing, I deal with dancers, people of that nature, or people, anybody who just want to get in the game and want to learn about the entertainment business. That's basically why I started the business. I went on this tour called the Who Got Next Tour with one of my best friends, Tone P, who's a big producer from here. He's from DC as well. And he produced a lot of tracks for a few people. And we went on tour and we realized that it was a major gap with the artists. They didn't know about they didn't know how to put together a song, how to get their songs mixed, things of that nature. So I just stepped in and decided, let me create a service. I wanted to create a service first that serviced the regular artists on how to get their entertainment skills together. And then it just formed into a label from there, for me meeting a few people in the industry. They was like, man, you just sound like you want to start a label. So I started the label, but I just didn't limit it to music, because I knew I deal with like people who do film and dance and act and things of that nature.
This is so interesting to watch, because you're moving around, which is typical, but you have the moon behind you. So it just kind of looks like you're floating. I'm like, this is so cool. He's like floating out there. That's interesting. I love the different backgrounds.
Thank you. To be honest, I don't know how to change it back.
Everybody says that like they got a picture stuck in it. I don't know. I don't even have a virtual background, but it's just interesting to watch. I like it. So when did you start Gil's Way?
I started Gil's Way back in 2018, mm-hmm. October of 2018, mm-hmm. and still moving now. So it's kind of a big impact. It's kind of like, you know how you have your first child. It's my baby, mm-hmm. so I stick with it. You know, so I think we got a couple more steps to go. Mm-hmm. But I think we'll be there shortly, though. Short amount of time.
2 years is usually that mark where a business, you know, they say 2 to 5 years, you know, where you kind of find your sea legs, I would say. You know, I'm not even going to talk about the success and the success rates and success numbers, but about 2 to 5 years, you kind of find your sea legs. Now, for you to just get to 2 years and then for COVID-19 and this global pandemic to hit, how did that affect you and your business, and how did you pivot?
You know, to be honest, it was always part of the plan to mm-hmm. actually move more digitally, because that's how music is ran and entertainment is ran now, through, you know, social media and streaming websites. Mm-hmm. But to be honest, we had a few places that we was about to go. We was about to go to London and Mexico and all that stuff, and all that got shifted. So we just moved more into working on that digital stuff. So I got the artists that I work with working on their websites, getting their social media plans together. Finding PRs and marketing is that's big in the entertainment industry. You got to be able to market yourself and market your product. So that's all I've been doing for the most part. So it's I'm happy we had it, and happy we had it written down, but we was just able to get to it faster, because we was kind of about to be moving.
mm-hmm. That's interesting.
So we talk a lot about working in the business or on the business instead of in the business. And it sounds like that's what you've had your artists doing, which is so valuable, and seeing that opportunity that maybe things aren't going quite the direction you wanted, but there's real value you can be adding as a result, I think is great that your artists are lucky to have you.
Thank you so much.
I think a lot of what I've seen as far as businesses is that's what they started working on, is the infrastructure, the website, the marketing, that kind of thing. Well, if anybody needs assistance with that, definitely send them over to AskSharifa.com. That's what we do, marketing. Okay. And also to be a guest on the show, we can help to get them out there and talk about their story and what they're doing. But I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, Noor Rahimi. I messed it up. I never say names. People know that. It's like, let me get past the introduction and then I'm good. But whenever I'm trying to introduction, I sound like a 2-year-old. But good morning, Noora. You are also a creative consultant. One of the things that I begin to say is that for some reason I see patterns. You know, it's like everybody picks the date that they want to appear, but for some reason, it's like everybody seems to have a certain theme on the show. But you're a creative consultant as well. Tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do, Noora.
Yeah, so I founded Culture Fix 5 years ago with Natalie Crew. And Culture Fix is a global network of artists and cultural producers. And what we do is help artists across borders connect to each other. Teach them how to enter new markets effectively so that they're not perpetuating any kind of colonialism when they enter new countries. And then use their platforms for social change, which we see right now is very important. And there's a right way to do it, and there's a not so right way to do it. And so in the consulting work, what I do is help artists and mostly musicians, but kind of creative entrepreneurs of all types achieve success without giving up their financial freedom, without giving up their creative control, and without giving up their personal integrity. So really looking at this question of how do we put power back in the hands of people who are creating art and creating culture, using that ability to shift social issues. So kind of very unapologetically to overthrow white supremacy, patriarchy, and capitalism, and allow those creatives to achieve success in the process. And so I've been consulting for 10 years. Culture Fix has been around for 5. I have a background in community organizing. So it's a long story and how I got into music, but really trying to put the power, like I said, back in the hands of creatives. And so for anyone who's interested in learning more, it's at Nora Rahimian on all the socials. We're constantly offering free information and access to resources because resource distribution and wealth redistribution is important, and information is a part of that. And so, a lot of what other people have already touched on, I'm like, yep, I got you. Randy and I need to have a long conversation. But that's kind of where we work at, is at the intersections of art and culture and social change from a very global perspective.
I love it. One of the things that you mentioned and that I've seen on several of the shows is we've discussed basically the themes of marketing and messaging, and even with PR, people having more of a softer tone with their marketing. You know, before the COVID-19, this global pandemic, it was more like buy now, get this, get my, you know, whatever it was, buy it. Over the last 3 months, we've seen it change to more of a, I'm here to help, you know, we're here for you, kind of softer tone. One of the things that you mentioned is that there's a right way and a wrong way to have a social impact. What are some of the right ways to do it?
Authenticity is the most important thing. You can't put up a black square for one day and then not go back, you know, and then not hire people of color the next day. So making sure that you're actually about what you're talking about, both internally and externally. The other piece is not doing harm to movements that already exist. So we see a lot of big national organizations come in and they have messaging, but they haven't been in touch with what's happening locally on the ground. So they're actually not only doing harm, but they're undoing all the work of organizers. And then remembering to be intersectional in your approach. So you can't say, you know, overthrow capitalism, but then not have a critical race analysis in the process. Or, you know, look at one thing, but not the other. And what's really important is that I think historically people have been scared to speak up. And what we're seeing more and more is that if you don't speak up, that's worse for your business. Especially for, I work with a lot of musicians who have, you know, there's a fear of if I take a side, I'm gonna lose fans. You're actually gonna gain, you might lose a couple, but what you gain are hardcore fans who will continue to support you and stand for you. And so that authenticity, that genuine connection, that using your power and platform for good, not only brings people in more, but it sets you up for longer term success. When all this is over, people will remember that you did something, that you stood up, that you took a risk, that you contributed to making their lives better, and you'll get that back through fans and customers and client engagement in the long run.
Did you happen to see the article this morning about Jeff Bezos and his email with the Black Lives Matter?
I didn't, but that man is trash. He's made more money during a pandemic. He treats his workers horribly. I mean, there should be no trillionaires in the world. So I'm actually, unless he's like giving away all his wealth, I'm not interested in any kind of bullshit email that man has to send.
No, it was Bill, did you see it?
No, I've had cats running around in the background making an unholy racket, so I'm coming off mute so I can jump in. But I want to hear what you guys have to say.
No, just one interest if anyone saw it, because he used it in a different reference where I believe Amazon put up some kind of hashtag Black Lives Matter. I don't know where it was or where he made the statement. And someone said they were about to make an order, but they canceled the order when they saw the Black Lives Matter. And that they told him in this email that he read to everybody else that he's going to lose a lot of business by taking that stand. So that was one example. The other example that I saw here in Long Beach, California, is they really putting out this message between like Uber and Postmates that you'll get free rides to Black-owned businesses. Or if you're a Black restaurant for Postmates or Uber Eats, they're going to waive the service fee if you purchase from Black-owned businesses. And I was just kind of, I was like, I wanted to have this conversation and this discussion because it, to me, it seems like all of a sudden, even businesses are just, everything is just Black Lives Matter, Black Lives Matter. What are your thoughts, Nora?
I mean, I think it's important to differentiate between actual activism and a performance. Putting up Black Lives Matter is the most mere minimum basic thing that anybody can do. Now take into account that you run Amazon, you have all this power, wealth, resources, your actions have to be proportional to the power and the privilege that you have. And so the fact that Amazon is putting out Black Lives Matter, but their facial recognition technology is used against protesters. Their facial recognition technology is based off of white people. So they have, you know, they have all these ways that systemically are not supporting people of color, are doing harm to activists. So there's a discrepancy there, right? And in that, you have to be able to identify that they recognize saying Black Lives Matter is important. They know that if they don't, it's going to cost them business. Even this thing about, oh, we're losing business, is a marketing ploy to bring in more business, but they're not actually using any of their power, resources, or privilege to affect real change. And so it doesn't count. Like, it doesn't count for Amazon to just put out Black Lives, hashtag Black Lives Matter, which they should have been doing 5 years ago anyway, when that thing popped off of Ferguson and when that first came out. And so it doesn't count. And we have to be, as consumers, very savvy about, is this good PR? Is this marketing? Or is this an actual desire to change? And there's lots of companies, Patagonia, Ben and Jerry's, like if you wanna look at a way to do it right, Ben and Jerry's has been doing it for like 20, 30, however long they've been around. And so those are companies where this isn't just a trend. They're not just jumping off something to make themselves look good. Uber and Lyft too, they treat their workers horribly. You can't say you support Black lives and then treat your contractors really poorly when those contractors are primarily Black and brown people, right? We have to look at the way these things are intersectional, and it's not just enough to throw a hashtag, especially when you're a big company with all this wealth, power, and privilege.
You're good, Nora. I have to get your opinion on a whole lot of other things.
I got a lot to say.
I love it. That's what we're here for. That's why I tell people, if you're going to be on the show, I'm looking for people who are honest, authentic, and opinionated. I don't need people who just come here and agree. Yes. Come back, Nora. I'm going
to
get you.
I got you. We're about to be friends.
I'm like, that's Nora's seat. You can't sit in Nora's seat. But I have some more comments. But before that, does anyone else want to comment or respond to anything that Nora said?
Yes, I wanted to say I completely agree with Nora. I think you have to look at the treatment of people of color who are hired by these businesses, these large conglomerates who have all the consolidation over socioeconomic wealth in our societies. I think we have to look at also how they are hiring. Are they hiring people of color? And then their treatment, also their salaries. How much are they paying them vis-a-vis their own incomes when they are doing the bulk of the labor? So all this has to be re-examined, and this is where change needs to come in. But this is a big concern of mine, because you see that much of what motivates people with wealth of this immense proportion is monetary gain. And so would it mean that we would have to pay them for this change to actually be established? I'm wondering what could motivate them to actually bring about change, treat people better, because for them, it's the dollar means everything. So I just have seen, you know, the reality of the situation, how money has really been the bottom line and really directed people's decision-making in businesses. And it's not, I've seen it's not easy for that change to occur. That's why it's a question I'm asking all of you. How do you think we can change this monetary driven mindset to be more humanitarian, more people driven, collaborative in nature? Because it's I feel like we are at odds, the forces out there, the ones in power and control versus ourselves who are genuinely wanting to see this change.
To be honest, for me, I think it would be ideal if we could shift the focus from money to humanity. But in the meantime, I feel like we can leverage that system and use the monetary focus to drive the change. And so I think it's a balancing act between living the examples of taking that more human focus, but also voting with our dollars, right? I know far more people who have stopped buying from Amazon or tried to minimize buying from Amazon over the past couple of weeks because of their lack of response and their lack of support. And I hope that message is coming through to them at the fiscal level. For myself, I realized I've ordered quite a bit from Amazon, and I made a commitment to go through this week and donate at least 20% of everything I've spent with Amazon to bail funds, to NAACP, to other organizations, and obviously try to spend less with Amazon moving forward. But you know, I think we have a lever in that dollar-driven focus, and we should be pulling it even while we're trying to change it.
I like that. And that's why I created my $50,000 production fundraiser. So if you're looking for places to make a donation, it is to help get out the Roundtable Talk Show, more advertising, more exposure for all of you, and also to be able to produce new shows and to produce new content. I'm raising $50,000. Just wanted to throw that in there if anybody was thinking about where they want to make their next donation. But Randy, I want your thoughts on what Nora was saying.
I think it's a big deal. The stuff that, you know, I live in the nation's capital that I deal with, you deal with that type of stuff in the federal government level. Just from, you know, I'm Black, so I deal with a bunch of different types of racism at work or on the street here mainly. But I think it's more becoming more inclusive. I think they need to add us to more boards. I think they need to come experience the culture and learn, because I see a lot of stuff happen where I have friends who had jobs and their white counterpart get in trouble for the same thing they get in trouble for, but they'll get fired. So I think it's just understanding us and trying to figure out how to find that middle ground. A lot of that comes from that. I know we as a people move with a lot of emotion, and that could set a lot of fear in some people, but me being around it and me knowing it, they not about to do nothing. They not about to do shit. So, no, I feel like, you know, you just gotta really tap in and just try to get to know somebody for the most part. But inclusion is a big deal for me. What I see with a lot of white managers and things like that, they will micromanage the Black employee. You know, I think they need to stop that as well. I think that's a big portion of what I deal with. Like, we here, we do the job, just trust us and what we can do, you know. But
yes, I love it. And that's going off into different, more specific conversation, which we can definitely have. I kind of, to a certain extent, want to focus on the businesses. But what was interesting to me is that, you know, everything's going on in the world. I was on a panel on Friday where all of a sudden a lady who was on one of my shows, she just happened to be white, contacted me, and she was like, "Sharifa, I'm doing this panel on race. Let's talk about it." And I'm like, okay. So we decided to do a panel on race. But what was interesting to me, and I always say what I'm thinking, that's just who I am. But when I show up to do the panel, one of the things I didn't realize was that it was myself and three Black women on the panel. And I'm like, okay, I thought we were going to discuss race. How do we discuss race with four Black women? You know what I mean? Like, me, when you want to talk race and have a real conversation, you need people of all races to have that conversation. So it was a very interesting conversation. But then I did another panel on Saturday, which was about 10 people, and it was three Black people on the panel, myself, another Black woman, and a Black man, and then it was seven people who, one lady was Hispanic, and the other people were white. But what's so interesting about that panel was before the show, they emailed me 20 questions. And the first question was, you know, what do African-American people need in order to feel better, need from us? But the 19 out of the 20 questions were questions like, how do we all love each other? How do we all unite? How do we bring good to the world? And I got on the show, immediately on the show, I said, okay. And this is live, but I said, you email me these questions, which basically only one question even mentions the African-American community. If you want to have a conversation, let's have a conversation. If you want to talk, let's talk. But it just seems like not these two people or these two panels in particular, but people want to have conversation without actually getting to the hard questions or the uncomfortable questions. And I'm not here to just make people feel better. Does anyone?
What it makes me think of is I think it's comfortable to look at racism as an individual problem and we'll just educate it away and we'll just love it away. But we've seen that that's actually not true. You can't speak to someone's sense of morality and then all of a sudden they'll stop being racist, because that's not the root cause of racism, mm-hmm. right? And as people like Angela Davis and Malcolm X have talked about and written about, racism and capitalism go together very closely. And so if we live in a world that's capitalistic, as long as we have capitalism, we will continue to have racism, because capitalism exists on exploiting people. And so what the real issue is people don't want to give up their power and their privilege. Mm-hmm. And as long as people get power and privilege by exploiting others, right? By maintaining the system of racism, of which the police are an arm of that, the military is an arm of that, ICE is an arm of that, prisons are an arm of that, all of which need to be abolished. As long as people get their power and privilege by oppressing others, we're not going to educate it out of them. We're not going to love it out of them. We're not going to, just meet a Black friend and now you will see that all, right? You're not going to Black friend it out of them. And so there is these issues exist systemically. They have been intentionally created. They are supported systemically. And so I think that's the part that's uncomfortable, because what that means is we have to revisit our entire structural systems in this country. We have to create entirely new institutions and systems. We have to create entirely new ways of relating to one another. And that is terrifying for a lot of people. And it makes them uncomfortable, because it means you have to really look at how you are complicit in so much of what's going on. And we all are, no matter, because we all have power and privilege in different ways, we all are implicit and complicit in something. But I think that's the part, is the conversations are so comfortable and easy when we're talking about, it's just a few bad apples. But no, there's people benefit from this. And until they're ready to understand how systemically deconstructing that is necessary, it's going to continue. And so to Rukshi's point from earlier, you can't just give, someone money and all of a sudden, right? We've seen that. We've given airlines money. We've given banks money. And what do? Just get richer on our backs, on our expense. And so the only way to push back is for people to boycott, to protest, to strike, to put pressure, right, on those systems of power to change. And that's what we're seeing now. It's the only way that change has ever come is through power against that power, pressure on that power. But it has to be systemic.
Yeah, as someone who focuses on systems and in a business process, it's a conversation I've had to have with myself, maybe a little late, but I'm definitely having it, now. And it's looking not just at how I'm building systems and organizations, but how am I ensuring that those systems are anti-racist, right? What controls are being put in place to make sure that that system is not unintentionally, from my perspective, not only not unintentionally creating disparity, but how am I actively supporting people who are on unequal footing to begin with? And to be honest, I don't have an answer yet. I haven't had an opportunity since I've started really digging into this to put it into practice. but it's something I need to keep in mind moving forward, right? And something that needs to be part of my practice every day for the rest of, probably for the rest of my life, because they, as much as I want the inequalities to be leveled out sooner, let's be realistic, it's going to be a fight forever and I can't stop fighting.
I just want your response to that, Nora, because I have an interesting view on what Bill just said, but I wanted Nora to respond to that real quick.
I think for you, Belle, what I see is you're in a position where you build up systems, right? And so you can build up system with these kind of, as you said, anti-race. It's not enough to be like, let's just take it down. The question is, what do we build it back up with? And I think that's the position that you're in, is how do we build it back up with these measures already in place, right? The thing is, there are things in place to protect racism, to protect capitalism, to protect patriarchy, right? But we're so used to it, we just think that's just the way it is, that we don't ever stop to question how these things have been integrated into us, right? One of the things I hear now is, well, you shouldn't talk politics at work. Yes, you should, because not talking politics at work is what allows the power dynamic to stay. You shouldn't discuss money at work. Yes, you should, because by not discussing money, that's how you don't know that your coworkers are getting paid more than you, and so you're never gonna advocate for yourself. But those are things so built in, and so to Belle's point, what we have is an opportunity to build into systems what the opposite looks like. And that's a lot of the work that I do with artists, is you don't have to work with a label. We've been taught that labels are success, right? You getting signed and you've made it. No, they screw you over all the time. So what does it look like to be independent and create an entirely new way of being in the music industry or of being in the creative industries, where it's not shady, it's not sketchy, you keep your masters, you keep your money, you keep your creative control, you don't have to participate in so much of the sketchiness. And so these other ways are possible, but because those stories aren't told, we don't believe it. And I think part of what's shifting now is seeing that these alternatives are possible and you can be successful, whether it's businesses who speak up or artists who go the independent route and aren't afraid to take a political stance, that these other ways can be effective. And the more we amplify it, that starts to shift the narrative as well.
That's very interesting. What I was going to say to Belle, you kind of reminded me of one of the ladies who was on the panel yesterday, and she owns Awake TV Network. And she's a white lady, Amanda. And she was just so, her heart was just breaking. Like, she felt like there's something that I can do. I have to do more, you know? And she just kept expressing that. And she asked at the end, she was like, what can I do? She asked all the panelists, Sharifa, what can I do for you? And I had to think about that. And that's why I was kind of interested. You sound kind of similar to her. But my response to her was, you know, honestly, there's nothing that you can do for me. I don't need you as a white woman to go do this for Sharifa, to go do this for Black people. What I feel and what I told her is, if there's something in your spirit that you are moved to do, that you feel that you can do, that you have a TV network and you want to create content that is more, you know, diverse, you want to focus on inclusion, if you want to focus on creating something that shows the disparities in the world, but I can't tell you what to do. You have to tell you what to do. You have to decide in your spirit what is the right thing. So to me, when I hear someone say that I'm creating strategies that are anti-racism, it kind of makes me go, okay, but what is anti-racism? To me, if you create a business in love, and you're entitled to have your business, you're entitled to create money. And as to me, and this is just, again, why I kind of wanted to hear what Nora wanted to say, is like, as long as you don't have a practice that says, okay, I'm gonna pay the white people this, but I'm gonna pay all the Black people this, then I don't feel like you need to take an extra anti-racism step. Just love, just build your business, just create your business, just do what you do, as long as what you do isn't created to hold anyone else down. That was kind of my view and my response to what you were saying.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And you know, to come to the example of, as long as you don't have a practice that says you pay white people this and Black people that, I think the default too easily falls into that, right? And so what I have in mind, what I think I can do in my sphere, is making sure that you have practices that set reasonable targets at every level and constantly build in an assessment. Are you looking at what your pay rates are for women, for minorities of all different forms, not necessarily to say, you know, you should have a goal of, you know, a particular lens of how your pay rate should be, but are you asking that question on a regular basis? Does your system reflect on itself and question its own practices? That's kind of what I have in mind and where
I'm hoping to take things. That's an excellent answer. Thank you for that. And thank you for that clarification. Because again, obviously I just threw out the pay rate, but for me, even though there is inequality in pay, usually it's not even just the pay, it's just getting in that door to begin with. You know, people look at, especially with a name like Sharifa, I'm pretty sure, you know, Rooksy may have experienced the same thing. A person, before they even get to the pay or get to hiring me, when they see that resume and it says Sharifa, they know I'm either Black or I'm from Saudi Arabia or something, and they're like, no, we're not going to hire her. You know, so I would like to see it, to a certain extent, I would say that I would like to see the hiring practices across the board be more equal. But then there's a side of me that I really expressed on Saturday that I don't really care about that. Like, to be honest, like, there's a side of me that doesn't care. It's a side of me that says, do whatever you want to a certain extent with your business, because I just don't want to be stopped from doing my business. I don't want to be stopped from someone saying that you can't get funding for your business because you're Black. I don't want somebody to say, okay, you know, we don't want any more Black businesses. That's to me, it has been more of my focus. But another thing that Nora said that was interesting was I made a post after the panel on Saturday with a picture of Angela Davis and her fro, and she's at the mic. And I said, okay, they want to talk. I said, let's talk, but I'm channeling Angela Davis right now. So just understand the energy of, you know, what I am. And it's not that I needed that to be just more powerful, but I really like the way she's very articulate and very, you know, able to answer their questions, how she walked out of a courtroom a free woman, and it was her intelligence. And so that's where I was on Friday. One of the gentlemen made a comment on the panel, one of the white men, he just so happened to be white man, but he said he didn't understand how, why they were protesting, why they were rioting, why they were looting, and why they didn't just, if there were laws on the books, that they find other ways to remove those laws. And another lady, she said, well, the protesters and the rioters and the looters weren't the same person. And I said, yeah, thank you. I said, but in addition to that, the fact that you even stated that they removed the laws off the book shows a complete misunderstanding of the situation. There are no laws on the books. There are no laws on the books in America that says that this is legal, but it's the culture of America. It's the people in America that still continue to do these things. So we've changed the laws, we've outlawed it, we made it illegal, but how do we change the hearts of people?
I mean, one of the things I think is important to recognize, right, is if you are not actively working to dismantle racism or white supremacy, or what you're doing is you're allowing the status quo to continue. So I disagree a little bit, Sharifa, that if you just aren't bad, you're good, mm-hmm. to simplify it. It doesn't work that way. If you're not actively pushing back, then you're upholding the existing system. And the existing system right now is white supremacy, mm-hmm. and it is benefiting white people, and it does create these discrepancies. And so even the narrative of, you know, so looting is an act of protest. Mm-hmm. Looting is protest. And even this narrative around, well, why don't they just do it this way? Or why is a way of trying to put control and restriction around how people grieve, around how the powerless push against power. And so even in this moment, right, where we're seeing people push back and struggle and say, we've had enough, and we've been telling you we've had enough, and we said it nicely and you didn't listen, and we followed the laws and that wasn't enough. And so that escalation that we're seeing is how the powerless push back against the system of power and especially again in a capitalistic construct, mm-hmm. when you're told to value business and you're told to value Gucci and Louis Vuitton and like all these places that people are hitting, then of course the place that you can target the most is going to be those places. And so this is a result of capitalism that people are looting, because that's what we've been taught to value. And so you're going to hit where it's going to be the most effective. And that's what we're seeing now, is what has made people more upset. It's not that they're upset about Black lives. They're upset about the stores. They're upset about Target. And that tells you a lot about how we value people in this country, is that people are more upset about a Target or an AutoZone getting set on fire than they are about the fact that Black people and brown people and trans people have been killed in this country for years and years and years and years. And so for some white guy to sit there and say, oh, but they should do it nicer, or they should follow the laws were not created to protect people like us. And so why would I follow the laws that were designed to destroy me and my folks? I'm not about that life. And so unless you're actively, right? Because here's the other thing, is there's a myth of good white people. Mm-hmm. They're like, well, I'm not one of the bad ones. I have a Black friend and I donated to BLM, but they're the ones that are most complicit in this kind of violence, because they allow it to happen by not using their power, by not using their platforms, and not using their privilege. So if you're not actively pushing back against these things, these are all the ways that you're allowing these systems to continue. And so it's not enough. It's not enough for you to hold up the things that are holding you in power. You either have to be very proactively about that life to create change, or you're protecting yourself. And at this point, whether it's your business or it's professionally or it's politically, you have to take a stance.
Yeah, one of the comments that I made during that panel was, all that's necessary for evil to succeed is for good men to do nothing, which was Edmund Burke. The other thing for me, and I hear you to a certain extent, but my philosophy and my focus is on reparations, the financial aspect of what is owed to us. So unless these people are going to go out and actively fight for that, for me, there's nothing that you can do to me. Because to me, anything else that you do to a certain extent is just, you know, a Band-Aid on the situation. Just like in Minneapolis, they burned down the police station. They burned down the police precinct, and they're going to rebuild it. All these stores that got looted, they're going to get insurance money. They have insurance. So they're going to be repaid for what they lost. But unless you rebuild that police precinct with the reasons why it was burned down the first time in mind, you're going to have the same situation.
But they've just disbanded the police. As a direct result of these actions that we've seen, they just disbanded the police over there, which 2 weeks ago even would have been unheard of. But no amount of polite protest, hey, excuse me, city council meeting, can you please again stop, would have never done that.
I didn't see that. I have to look at that. I know in California, they deducted $150,000, I believe it was, from the police force. So when you say disbanded, there's no police anywhere in Minnesota?
So what they're doing is, they haven't fully abolished it, but they've disbanded it to look at what alternatives are. And the move is to replace some of the things that the police were doing responsible for with community-driven responses.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we don't know.
No, it's just Minneapolis, not Minnesota, I believe.
Yeah, okay, so, yeah, you're right, Mel.
So there's no police in Minneapolis?
They're like I said, they're disbanding it and replacing it with community systems, and then figuring out what the rest would look like. But for now, they're disbanding. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. No, I have to look at that, because part of what I saw was that a lot of things that were happening were temporary while everything was going on. So that's why I was kind of curious as far as what the plan is. So that's interesting. Belle, you were going to say something?
No, I was saying that we had Minneapolis, not Minnesota entirely.
Okay. Well, I've been talking, it is 8:55. This is an interesting conversation. Nora, I have another panel I think I want you to be a part of that we're creating. We'll definitely talk about that. It's been a pleasure to have everyone on the show. What I love to do at the end of every show is just allow my guests the opportunity to speak directly to the audience, to everyone who's watching live, as well as everyone who's watching this in the archives, and let them know what you want them to take away from your appearance. And we're going to start with you, Randy.
Hey, thanks for having me again. I really appreciate it. Well, for the guests that's looking out there, I just want to say, just be patient, keep working hard, and be fair. That's the biggest thing I think we that took away from this conversation is fair. The unfair doesn't fit well for the Black community, the Black and Brown community. So just try to be fair and more inclusive.
I love that. Rooksy?
Thank you for this opportunity and having us all chat together. I want to share really our re-examination of our business culture, but our broader culture as we were discussing today, and really pushing forward to healing the pain that we all have and we see in our society that is really being expressed at this time, and through mutual support and collaboration, how we can all come together to move away from a selfish, egocentric, racist, dominating system towards friendship, collaboration, and mutual support of one another. So let's all move towards this positive future.
Aww. I love your spirit. I love your spirit. You have been such a blessing since we met. Belle, what do you have for us?
I would say from my perspective, there are huge challenges out there, and we need dramatic action, but we also need to look at the actions that we have personal control over. So when you are looking at your own business, when you're looking at your own practices, it's well and good to support the global movements, but you have to start close to home and make sure that you are not individually building and supporting systems that are furthering the problem. And so I think that's my key takeaway, is to think big, but also make sure you're not overlooking the realm where you have direct control.
I love it. And then when in doubt, ask Nora.
Yes.
I mean, I ditto everything that Belle said. I think the biggest thing is that everyone has a sphere of influence, and sometimes those small, uncomfortable conversations with the people closest to you are the most impactful. Whatever power you have, whatever privilege you have, if it's not scary, if you're not taking a risk, you're probably not doing enough. And so really make sure that you're pushing for the kind of change that we're all trying to create, and not just what's comfortable for you or what feels good to your ego.
And where can they find out more information about you?
Everything is at Nora Rahimian, NoraRahimian, Instagram, Twitter. I do one-on-one consulting, workshops, webinars. We're running a mastermind for women of color. So specifically for women of color, if you're like stressed and feeling unsupported right now, we're doing ongoing enrollment for that. I respond to all my DMs, so send me questions. If you're trying to figure some of this stuff out, I'm here to have conversations with you.
I see. I love it. We're going to be talking more. I hope all of you decide to come back to the Roundtable Talk Show. I want to thank you for being guests today. I want to also thank everyone who tuned in to watch the show live, as well as everyone who's watching it in the archives. We definitely appreciate you. We have learned so much. We have discussed so much, and I got a poem. So you definitely want to make sure you go ahead and share this episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. And if you are interested in being a guest, please visit the website at asksharifa.com. Until tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, everyone have a safe and a peaceful day. Bye now.